Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host, Dan, radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Natural Instinct for Science show. I quote our president and commander-in-chief, "I have a natural instinct for science." And that is why Donald Trump says he disagrees with scientific consensus on human-caused climate change, because he has a natural instinct for science. Special thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio and to the MSU Ronald G. Eaglin Space Science Center. We have a special radio wave. Shelley Irving is still in our Isomville Bureau trying to straighten out the weather and traffic reports. So in her absence, we are left with Executive Director of Network and Infrastructure Rick Phillips to explain to you how to access our scientific show on the web.
I appreciate you bringing me back out of exile. To get the audio of the show, go to WMKY.org. That's right, Moorhead State Public Radio's website. Find Health Matters. Look at the list of shows. But most important, there's a link there where you can listen to the shows. So the show airs on Saturday, again on Sunday, and then on Tuesday, it gets off of that pesky FM radio and turns into your internet podcast. And so somewhere around Tuesday, 4 days after the first show airs, you'll get it up on the internet, and you can have it delivered to you via podcast. If you know what a podcast is, the link is there and you'll know what to do. After that, it's time to interact. We say stuff, you say stuff, and then we do it together, and it looks very synchronous. So to do that, go to facebook.com/HM Radio Show, and that'll get you to our fan page. You can see what content we've shared or posted. Sometimes it's related to the show. A lot of times it's just timely, because we are a recorded show. So sometimes we're, 7 to 10 days behind. So there are times when topics need to be brought out more emergently or maybe after the fact. So again, go there, shoot us some feedback, give us some show topics. Facebook is your opportunity to kind of mold the show into what works for you. So we encourage you to do that. We do get involved. We do get our hands dirty, so to speak, on that website. So absolutely ask us stuff. We've got a couple of true blue ones out there that we talk to on a regular basis, but certainly we would love to add to the family. So again, you can find us and interact with us at facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor for today's show, once again, the Vaccination League, reminding you don't be late, vaccinate, the all-natural way to take care of infections without those nasty artificial antibiotics or vitamins. Like Mother Nature with a 23-gauge needle, vaccination augments your body's own immune response to those viruses and bacteria you might come into contact with, and it is the most natural way you can imagine to take care of infections.
Are there needles smaller than 23-gauge?
Yeah, probably.
Convincing. That was absolutely convincing.
I think it depends on the vac, to be honest.
Well, I'm just saying, as the number gets higher, it gets smaller, right?
Right. 23 is pretty darn small.
I was going to say, 23 seems pretty small to me.
I know, because before I did this, several years ago, before the Vaccination League hired us to promote vaccines, I went and checked on the needles used to deliver vaccines, and at least some of the vaccines were delivered with a 23-gauge. So I know for a fact that some are. I don't know if they all are, to be honest.
15 years, and we've just got that revelation out of you. Yeah, we've been doing the Vaccination League for 15 years.
We don't do any
years.
Fact-checking. We just sort of let it wing it.
And you're giving me trouble about refracted light last week.
It's the way it is. But at any rate, they're back. And reminding you that October is absolutely the peak month for vaccination against influenza, which is a problem because now it's November.
Ooh. You are like on fire today.
I am.
Del Fuego.
So, the Advisory Committee of Immunization Practices, that's part of the CDC, they looked at data from previous seasons concerning the effectiveness of the flu mist nasal spray. Now, this is the one that the CDC, the Advisory Committee, says is okay. The American Academy of Pediatrics is not so certain. While data from the 2010 and 11 and the 2016-17 influenza seasons indicated it was not effective against some of the main influenza viruses in the U.S. among children aged 2 through 17. The vaccine was effective against influenza B and had some effectiveness against what's called the H3N2 viruses that was similar to that of inactivated vaccines. Some data suggests the new strain included in the flu mist nasal spray will have better effectiveness than previous flu mist vaccination, but no published estimates are available yet. Basically, based on what they saw, The CDC, the advisory committee, is anticipating that there will be across-the-board improvement in the coverage with flu mist nasal spray. But the American Academy of Pediatrics wants to see it actually happen before they endorse it. So the CDC says we should make a strong influenza vaccine recommendation. And Rick, you will love this. Here is your useless mnemonic from the CDC. It's called SHARE, S-H-A-R-E. And SHARE, the S stands for share. Share the reasons why the vaccine is right for the patient. And it is. I mean, it's hard to
argue with the fact. Couldn't they say?
Yeah, it would have been
state?
Better. Yeah.
All right. State the reasons?
The H is for highlight positive experiences with flu vaccines, personal or in practice. And it's hard to tell. It's hard to highlight a benefit from influenza vaccine because the benefit is nothing happens. If the flu vaccine works perfectly, nothing happens. You don't get sick. And if it doesn't work perfectly, you don't get as sick. And it's hard for me to say, you know, I've had a lot of people who were not as sick as they could have been. That's not much of a highlight. But I share why a flu vaccine might be right. Well, you might not die from influenza. I highlight the fact that I've known many people who didn't get as sick as they might have gotten if they had gotten sicker. Then address the questions and concerns about the flu vaccine. And one of the big ones still is about autism. It has been looked at and looked at and looked at, and I am so sorry that those rumors came about. There is absolutely not a shred of evidence that influenza causes a rise in autism. On the other hand, viral infections can do a lot of damage to people's brains. Everything from West Nile virus to chickenpox to just about any influenza you think of, they love to be in the nerve cells. That's where they live. Remind patients, that's the R, that flu vaccines protect them and their loved ones from serious illness and related complications. So I have reminded you of that. And finally, explain the potential costs of getting the flu. You could miss work. You could wind up in the hospital. You could die. All of those are relatively costly things.
Couldn't they just say the last one and be done with it?
Yeah. I thought it was, I thought it was a useless mnemonic. If you want to remember the mnemonic SHARE, then you should. But I'm just telling you, get vaccinated. Last year, half of women who were pregnant did not get vaccinated. The vaccine goal was more than 80% for pregnant women. 49% got it last season, even in the midst of this extremely severe influenza season. If you are pregnant, you can get an influenza vaccine any time during your pregnancy. As you get into the second and third trimester, you are more likely to die, but more likely to be hospitalized, more likely to have a severe respiratory illness coming out of influenza, and it can have a bad effect on your baby. Why would you do that? We don't know. Please, if you are pregnant or thinking about getting pregnant or not thinking about getting pregnant, please get your vaccination and get it soon because we've got to get this at least 2 weeks before Thanksgiving or you are going unprotected. That's our sponsor, the Vaccination League. Don't be late. Vaccinate. Now, along the same lines, Rick, and this is a natural instinct for science, so let's just start talking about scientific stuff. The Wall Street Journal last year reported that orange juice sales had seen an unexpected spike, rising almost a whole percentage point in the 4 weeks that ended January 20th of last year's influenza season. Sales, this is the first year-over-year increase for orange juice in almost 5 years. Really thought that we had gotten past the idea that orange juice was nature's remedy for infections. But I guess in desperation, due to the severe flu season last year, orange juice sales surged. Not the first time this has happened. Sales of orange juice grew 8% during the 2009 swine flu pandemic.
But is that directly related to people thinking the vitamin C?
That's the theory.
I mean, because, you know, there was a time where you know, your cough drops, you know, had zinc and vitamin C and all that stuff in it. And,
yeah.
I mean, maybe it still does. You know, I don't know. But
Linus Pauling, a Nobel Prize winner in 1970, after he got his Nobel Prize, he got very interested in vitamin C, and he released a book advising Americans to consume 3,000 milligrams of vitamin C every day. A reviewer in the AMA Journal in 1971 said, this is a very irritating book. Unfortunately, many lay people are going to believe these ideas that the author is selling. And so there was a review of over 30 studies into vitamin C and the common cold, found that vitamin C reduced the length of a common cold by 8%, taking about 10 hours off a 5-day cold. No research indicates that it has any effect at all against influenza. So if you are avoiding vaccination and you are waiting and you're going to drown your influenza in orange juice, this message from Health Matters, you are kidding yourself.
Hope you like orange juice.
Hope you like orange juice.
Because that's the reason you're doing it.
Yep, because it doesn't do anything else. As a matter of fact, you know, orange juice, I grew up thinking orange juice was kind of sunshine in a bottle.
Well, you grew up in the Tang era.
I did. There was Tang. There was also a woman named Anita Bryant, who was a point person for Florida orange growers, who had us all convinced that orange juice was just as natural as it could be. And I have to repeatedly, pretty much all of my diabetic patients, or many of my diabetic patients, have been convinced that orange juice is a healthy thing to do. And it is liquid sugar. If your sugar drops in the hospital, we're going to try to get you some orange juice, because nothing makes your sugar go up faster than orange juice.
It's pretty good. No, I like orange juice. Don't get me wrong. It's good. Now, you know, to me, what seems like it has even more sugar is pineapple juice. Pineapple juice seems like it has loads of sugar in it.
But the thing is, nobody says pineapple juice is healthy.
No, you're right.
When you're having a party,
right.
You have pineapples. I know if I'm eating pineapples, I must be having a good time. Pineapples is a good time fruit.
They're vacation fruit.
Right. Absolutely. I'm eating cucumbers, I'm having a bad day. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, believe me, I know.
Yeah, and so cucumbers and squash, that is when you have to eat your vegetables. But pineapple, you eat that mostly when you're in a tropical setting, a cruise, a beach, or something like that. Pineapple is a fun fruit.
Or you're at some kind of a buffet. Somebody put it out. You're at something. You're probably not at home.
Isn't it odd that Florida is a source of oranges, but Florida also is a source of grapefruit?
Oh, we don't want to go there.
Yeah,
They still don't like me over grapefruit.
Yeah, with grapefruit.
But that's okay. I don't like their grapefruit.
Who in their right mind would eat grapefruit? That's all we're saying. We're gonna move on. But the point is, orange juice does not
protect you from colds and influenza. Are you trying to elicit another complaint?
You think we're going to get the Florida pineapple people are going to write us again?
I love pineapple. I'm never going to complain about pineapple. They're going to love me, and they're going to want me as a spokesperson.
That's right. But the citrus.
But the grapefruit people,
yeah.
I'm going to be on their endangered species list.
And let me just put down the other stuff, and let's talk for one more just
for 38 seconds.
Yeah, we got that on grapefruit. Remember that grapefruit actually interferes with the metabolism of a large number of medicines, of prescription medicines.
Right.
And it can alter them in ways that can make a difference in your health.
If you like grapefruit and you take medicine, you should talk to your doctor.
You should, because it has a serious effect on their metabolism. Well, this is not minor. It is not something just to whiff at. This is something that, frankly—
It's legit.
Yeah. A legitimate interference in the metabolism of medication. So talk to your healthcare provider about that. If for some reason you think that drinking grapefruit juice is something
tasty.
You would want to do.
Tasty.
What a horrible idea. Speaking of horrible ideas, we're going to come back with our second fractional portion after a break. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the natural instinct for science. According to the Associated Press, U.S. President Donald Trump, addressing why he disagreed with the scientific consensus on human-caused climate change, he says, "I have a natural instinct for science." And we at Health Matters respect natural instinct for science to some extent. The sponsor for the second time, Vaccination League, reminding you, don't be late. Vaccinate. That's right. It is past time for your influenza vaccination. If you are over 6 months of age, you should get vaccinated. On September 27th, the CDC reported that influenza caused 80,000 deaths in the United States last year based on their best guess, looking at people with either influenza or pneumonia on their death certificate who died during flu season. Vaccination rates decreased among children. They have continued to fall steadily. Half of pregnant women did not get vaccinated. These numbers are going to come back, and they're going to hurt us and haunt us. Science is not, it's not a temple. It's not a certain person. Science is, frankly, doing controlled experiments to find out what the truth is rather than just guessing at what the truth is. And since the ancient Greeks, we have learned that if we want to know what the truth is, we design an experiment to do it. And that's what science is about. So you run these experiments, and in the case of influenza vaccination, we run experiments and we know exactly what influenza vaccine will do and what it will not do. We also know about influenza itself. And so when a person who spends their lifetime researching influenza tells you that influenza vaccine is a good thing, that means something, we believe. Unfortunately, it means less than it used to because our vaccination rates are dropping, and that's putting people's lives at stake. Our sponsor, the Vaccination League, it is time for your influenza vaccine if you believe in such things. To start the second fractional portion, this was from October 11th, the premiums for benchmark silver plans on the federal market exchanges. This is the Affordable Care Act, and we are now in the sign-up period for the Affordable Care Act. They will drop on the federal individual market exchanges. They will drop in 2019, first decrease since the Affordable Care Act was implemented. Now, that sounds like a good thing. The 1.5% overall drop is attributed to looser regulation. And, of course, under the Trump administration, they have loosened a number of regulations. The problem is, you know, when you look at this, you get something, you give something. The Obama administration said, we want to cover all pre-existing conditions. We want to make sure that they are fully covered. We do not want people to have to be on the hook for their health care bill. And that series of regulations drove the premiums to prices that many of my patients could not afford.
Right.
And so we wound up seeing people in the free clinic who found that it was less expensive to take the possibility of a penalty on their income tax by simply not having any proof that they had insurance for the preceding year. Now, the Trump administration adopts a different approach and says, well, we will allow people to have an incomplete coverage from their insurance, or we will allow the insurance companies a little more leeway to exclude some conditions. The price has come down. The coverage is not as good. So, again, you get what you pay for. I have mixed feelings about this. The people I saw that had no insurance, they did not benefit from the Affordable Care Act. On the other hand, there are many people who were able to get complete coverage, adequate coverage for the first time in their lives, and they did. And so I see both sides of this, but one way or another, we need to try to cover as many people as possible with the best insurance we can get for them. And this is very difficult. Again, the CMS Administrator Seema Verma dismissed the idea that Donald Trump cut off last year of the cost-sharing reduction payments hurt the market. The action was followed by a nearly 40% increase in average premiums as insurance added the cost to their benchmark plans at that time. And really, then, the other possibility is that the slight drop in premiums may be a correction from last year's increase. Administration will be writing new guidance for waivers to allow states to broaden their exchange plan to design. And again, they're going to create more things, and these more things may be less expensive. They will also be less coverage on both sides of that. I can understand that. Kentucky's, unfortunately, continue to go up, partly because our health continues to be bad, and we continue to use a lot of health insurance. So 1% drop in premiums in 2019, according to predictions. From the CMS Administrator, Seema Verma. Now, Rick, we talked last show about getting advertisers, pharmaceutical advertisers, to announce their prices of their TV drugs. If you advertise on TV, if you hire Phil Mickelson or some other athlete, celebrity spokesperson to advertise your drug on TV, you have to tell them how much it actually costs. People with insurance would not pay that amount themselves, but that amount will be added to insurance costs for everybody. So again, a drug that is $1,000, $10,000, $100,000 a year, and there are those drugs, will simply raise insurance rates for all of us. This is Gina Colada, who writes a lot of health stuff for the New York Times. She says she's talking about these PCSK9 inhibitors. You know, we talked about those, Rick. Do you remember that?
No. Well, I mean, I don't ever pay any attention to drugs, so you'll have to refresh my memory.
All right, there's two of them. One, the brand name is Praluent, and the other one is Repatha. And these drugs, they lower your cholesterol like nobody's business. You can be on the strongest statin drug made, and they can still, you add that, and they can still cut your cholesterol in half. They do not cut your costs in half, because these cholesterol-lowering medicines can cost as much as $14,000 a year, and that's every year for the rest of your life. Every year, if you're a young person, you're in your 40s, you have a high cholesterol, you could be looking at 30 years of $14,000 plus and adjusted for inflation dollars per year. And there's a lot of these drugs that are really expensive.
They better work at that price.
Yeah. Well, define work. I mean, you know.
That's my point.
They may lower your cholesterol, may cut your risk of heart disease, but you could do a heart transplant.
But we've talked about on the show that just because you lower the number doesn't mean you lower the risk.
Right.
And so in some cases, all they're doing, these drugs have proven to lower numbers, but they haven't necessarily proven to lower the risk.
They've got some early indications that they may affect risk, but again, the cost of them is just extraordinary, and this is the problem with these drugs. And in fact, then, because they are so costly, they're out of reach of many people who might benefit from them.
Sure.
Insurers defended the practice. They said the price of the drug were unreasonable, and so they would not cover them. 80% of patients who attempted to get one of these drugs were denied, and only 50%, even after an appeal, got the drugs. If your doctor says, I would like to put you on this drug, the statin is simply not doing the job, and this does have some evidence it might help, 80% of people wind up getting denied first time around by their insurance companies. And the insurance companies say it's just too much money. Stephen Miller at Express Scripts, he says the science behind these drugs is astonishing, but the price is astonishing. Doctors need to see these drugs a lot. They will have to see these drugs are better than less costly alternatives. Statins cost $250 a year. These things cost $14,000. You better get, as we say, a lot of extra bang because you're spending a lot of extra bucks.
Yeah, I mean, that's an awful lot of money.
Yeah. Now, then the deal-making occurs. You start a new drug, you set it at an outrageous price, and then you talk to the insurance companies and the pharmacy benefits managers and try to get it down. So Express Scripts entered a deal to offer Preluent. It would simplify its pre-authorizations forms. Amgen has a deal with Harvard Pilgrim Health Plans to reduce the price of its drug, Repatha, and it will refund the price of the drug to any patient who has a heart attack. How about that?
Oh, my goodness.
That's pretty neat, isn't it?
That sounds dangerous.
Amgen has 20 other deals in the works. Result, the access for people with commercial insurance has increased by 33%. Now, here's the thing. You know, they set these prices high, and then they make deals.
Right.
For my patients in the free clinic, for patients who are not a part of that insurance, no deal, $14,000
right.
a year.
Straight fee.
Yeah. You know, we are creating, piece by piece, a two-tier system.
Of course.
Where the health of wealthy people and educated people is not just better than those who are less educated or wealthy, but the curves are diverging. Every deal struck, every advantage given, targeting wealthier people, winds up causing a greater divergence.
But isn't our whole country moving away from it just seems to me like we are doing that. And that's troubling, you know. No matter which party you're in, it should be troubling. We got to figure out how to slow that down, right? For a capitalist, you know, it's how do you stay a capitalist and not turn that, not keep going hardcore in that direction. I don't know. We got some tough times ahead of us, Tony. Real tough times ahead of us, and healthcare is probably one of the worst issues. It's terrible.
Yeah, and I live in the state of Kentucky, which has one of the largest divides in the nation.
Right.
We are in, effectively, in terms of life expectancy, in terms of health, a third world country here in eastern Kentucky. And, again, the Commonwealth of Kentucky is not.
Yeah, well, it's tough. I mean, not only, you just have these incredible disparities, right? So you got the amount of poverty and the inability to afford some of these revolutionary new, drugs and treatments. Yes, do they have access to some insurance? Probably. There's probably some way they're getting their hands on some, types of support. But then again, there's an awful lot of free care going on, a lot of free clinic work, a lot of things that will not give them access to these types of things.
I couldn't say it better.
No, it's just tough. I mean, we're in a tough spot. And, the sad thing is, and not that we tend to get political or wax poetic at times, but, nobody, I don't see anybody who really looks like they have a passion to solve this problem. I can't remember the last time I saw somebody who just, when I looked at their ad or heard them speak or watched, nobody's got the fire to fix this country. And that's troubling. Can you think about our country? Our country, kind of rebelled and became who they are. And people, they were passionate about that. They wanted to do that. I just don't see the same kind of passion to fix our stuff.
United we stand.
Exactly, but we are not united right now.
Yeah.
And in almost every aspect. Me as a technology guy, there's a time where you have to look inward and go, my gosh, did technology make this happen faster? Or did it play some role? Because, again, in the way social media has kind of come up and the way the internet's allowed us to be either, it really has made the earth get smaller, right? So where there might have been one of your kind in a community, if we take the one of your kind in a community out of every community, now that's a pretty big group. And so the internet has kind of pulled together groups of people. And instead of being extreme minorities, they feel more like they're closer to a majority, right? And it just changes the landscape of how we behave and how we act and how we talk and how we communicate. Throw in the socioeconomic portions of it, and we're ripe for disaster. We really are, and it's troubling. And we've said over and over again about this drug being $14,000 a year. That one's absurd, but we're talking about people who can't afford $1,000 a year.
And so, and we see those all the time in the free clinics. They come into our other clinics, some of them on government insurance that is threatened with being canceled. And also, many of them are not able to make the payments on their own insurance, or their insurance has such high deductibles they still cannot afford their health care. We've got to solve this, and it will not be solved by business as usual. People are going to have to rethink the way we approach health care. And it starts, obviously, in your home. It starts with you trying to protect your health, rather than getting into a position where you have to rely on $14,000 a year pills to get by. So please take care of yourself. Don't let yourself get into this mess. And we will try to figure out how to bail you out if that does happen. October 19, 2018, this was Deborah DeSanzo. And she is the Rick Phillips of her place. She was the head of IBM's health division for only 3 years. She was in charge of IBM Watson Health. After a rocky 3 years, she left her role on October 19th. She will no longer head the Cambridge-based division, pitch the company's famed artificial intelligence capabilities as solutions for a myriad of health challenges, because frankly, IBM's Watson has not done squat.
Right.
Heavily advertised as potential Watson Health, IBM has not met expectations. Its cancer software has been ridiculed by doctors inside and outside of the company. It struggled to integrate different technologies from other businesses. It laid off employees in the process. I'm not sure what caused DeSanzo's departure, but IBM executives have said they bet much of the futures of the company on success in healthcare, and improving Watson Health's standing in the industry was crucial to that effort. She was brought in 2015 to be the manager. They mentioned who will be succeeding her. IBM, declining revenues, third quarter earnings were off. The first major technology to introduce artificial intelligence-based products. Now, what happened with Watson was kind of complicated. Watson, of course, can remember everything you put into him. And the idea was then that he could search through, he or she. I shouldn't be sexist in my computer gender assignments.
It
could search through its massive databases and figure out exactly the best, maybe unexpected, chemotherapy regimen for a person with cancer, comparing the genetics of the cancer to the known strengths and weaknesses of various chemotherapeutic agents. The problem was that these massive databases were out of date.
Right.
And in order to keep them up to date, they must be constantly refreshed with new research. And the problem was, Watson itself could not determine what was good research and what was bad research, so it relied on human beings to review and reach a consensus about what was good research. And by the time the committee had reached research, Watson was behind.
Right.
Watson was always behind the latest research on cancer care.
You know what? The statement that comes to mind for me is, and I say this all the time in jest, and what makes it to me, when I say it funny, is there is, and not just a hint of truth, there's kind of a lot of truth in this, but, computers really are only as smart as the dumbest programmer, right? I mean, and expand on that to say, okay, so Watson has given he's given knowledge, or it is given knowledge to work with, right?
Right.
And unless you can grow that knowledge or change and manipulate that knowledge in a more positive or full manner, then you're really just kind of going through. Really, all he's doing is sorting and indexing and trying to find stuff and put it in the same kind of row. He's lining stuff up for people to look at.
And it's interesting.
But there's no way to grow the knowledge artificially.
Right.
We just haven't quite figured that out yet. It's easy when you're playing chess and you can look at a chessboard and you know the rules and there's boundaries and, you know, cancer doesn't have a lot of boundaries.
Right. And your point is well taken. That is, this is not true artificial intelligence. This computer could not increase its own knowledge.
Correct.
It was still dependent entirely on its human handlers in terms of its knowledge of medicine. And you think about that, that sort of makes sense. If the computer suggests that somehow that we should embed microscopic plastic utensils in your body to treat your cancer, I mean, they're... No one knows what to do with that stuff. Yeah, no, not happening. So
it's just not going to work. But again, and it goes back to, you know, we had high aspirations, but we were, and I'm not, obviously, you know, Watson has a lot of, I mean, I think it took us how many years to get to space? I mean, and how many failed attempts and how much, you know, there are reasons why, and I think the one word here is discovery, right? So we have to continue our quest for discovery. And that means we build the Watsons and we put them in the scenarios where we're trying to be better and we're trying to grow society. But ultimately, everything we're talking about, Tony, almost everything we've ever talked about on the show has participated in the method of discovery, right? It's all about discovering what's next. And sometimes the discovery is you can't do this or you can't do that, but eventually you can, or you have to change it.
So again, with our Natural Instinct for Science show, we've talked about the popularity of orange juice for flu. We've talked about prices inhibiting the new cholesterol-lowering medicines. We've talked about the failure of artificial intelligence, at least in its first iteration as Watson. We've got some more things to add to this in our final fractional portion. But before then, we're going to take a break and let you think about human beings' relationship to scientific inquiry. Rick eloquently expressed this. I have nothing to add to it except it's time for a break.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I don't think I've got another waxing poetic speech in me for this one, but I'll still continue to be Rick Phillips.
The idea of human discovery, you know, the foundation of science, we've got to allow us to, again, people to turn scientific inquiry to answer answer questions, the pressing questions of humanity. You can't answer, for instance, you cannot answer the issue of abortion with science. We know a lot about when babies are at a certain stage of development.
Sure.
There are moral issues, but there are many things like using orange juice for influenza, providing some of these new medications.
Or correlating massive data sets to try to find how to cure cancer. I mean, these are absolutely things that, and it's funny because I think through the industrial age, we learned how to build things. And I think now we're trying to build ideas. We're trying to refine our ideas, right? So we're trying to take all, I mean, we're still building big, bad things. We're really now starting to kind of take that next step and to try to ask really go deeper into the whys, right?
Right. Our sponsor for today's show, for the final time, Vaccination League. Don't be late, vaccinate. Listen, I'm going to make this short. We have talked about falling.
Get your stupid flu shot.
Yeah, get your flu shot. And do it very quickly because you need 2 weeks before Thanksgiving in order for that flu shot to be effective for the Thanksgiving holidays. So it is, I mean, I can't even believe you're still listening
to
the show.
Go to your workplace. Go to your Kroger. Go wherever it is, but go get your flu shot.
Kroger. You went with Kroger. You could have advertised any place, and you went with
Kroger. Well, but I mean, here in Moorhead, Kroger offers them. You know, yeah. I think Walmart offers them.
Rite Aid, Walgreens.
They all offer them. Yeah. There's no reason why you can't spend, even if you got to buy it, it's like $20, right?
It's Saturday morning. It's Sunday morning. You can still actually get your flu shot today.
It's not $14,000.
Yeah. That's right. And it's not $14,000. Please don't put yourself at risk for that. That's our sponsor, the Vaccination League. Don't be late. You already are late. So don't be any later and vaccinator.
Did you just rhyme that last word?
I can wing it with the best of them. This one from CNBC, but it was basically reporting the National Youth Tobacco Survey. The CDC does an annual National Youth Tobacco Survey. They survey young people and teenagers, and they found in 2017, 8% of high school students reported smoking cigarettes, up from 7.6% of high school students were smoking cigarettes in 2016. Despite all the science we know, despite Health Matters, the rule of Health Matters, anything you set fire to and put in your mouth is going to be a bad idea. More kids are smoking cigarettes now, at least in 2017, than were in 2016, and we expect it's going to continue to rise. There is concern about the use of e-cigarettes. That is, e-cigarettes allow you to put something in your mouth to deliver drugs to your brain. And so from there, it's pretty simple to put something else in your mouth and set fire to it. Vaping up by 77% among high school students, somewhat staggering figure. 77% increase in vaping in 1 year among high school students. I think people, according to Scott Gottlieb, who's the FDA commissioner, he says, I think people should interpret the fact that I and others made such a dramatic shift from our prior position with respect to these products as representing the fact we have seen information that is deeply disturbing and startling in terms of the rapid rise of youth use over a short period of time. That is, it was only a very short time ago, a couple of years ago, we were talking about the possibility of e-cigarettes as being an alternative or perhaps getting people off cigarettes. What we found instead is our young people have embraced these drug delivery systems, and it appears in the process have also increased their rate of combustible cigarettes, the old-fashioned light 'em, set 'em, fire to 'em cigarettes as well. Now, those two may be completely unrelated. You may stick one electronic thing in your mouth and deliver drugs, and for completely unrelated reasons, stick another thing in your mouth and set fire to it and deliver drugs. But any way you look at it, both those are very disturbing trends. So don't set fire to things and put them in your mouth. Another Health Matters rule, along with don't take orange juice for the flu, and please find some way that people can pay for life-saving medications. It's an interesting time we live in, Rick.
Yeah.
I believe that vaping is going to, I hate to say the word explode because they actually do sometimes do that, but I think vaping is going to explode because there is no better way to get drugs to your brain rapidly than using e-cigarettes or some type of vaping device.
Yeah, no, it's hard to.
So you name what you want to put in it, and you put it in it, and you can get it to your brain instantly. I would be surprised, frankly, if regular cigarettes and even marijuana cigarettes survive very long, because I think we're going to just custom blend these chemicals and just stick them in an e-cigarette. The idea of rolling leaves up and setting fire to them is still mystifying to me.
You see lots and lots of people just turn into vape. I don't get it. I mean, I was a smoker, but, you know, and it's been a long, long time ago. So it's not like I'm a recent recovering smoker. I mean, I smoked for a few years and then I quit in 1989, you know, so it was a long, long time ago. The whole vaping thing, we kind of sold the bill of goods that this was a safe method, you know, or at least, you know, we kind of let that talk out, not necessarily we as in Health Matters, but we as a society kind of said, oh, look, we found an alternative. And I think we've just totally misdone it. So, you know, we're the same society that came up with Pop Rocks, right? Exploding candy in your mouth, right? There's a good idea. Let's drink it with some pop.
Well, Rick, I have a natural instinct for science, and I think I can reason that that was a good idea. And vaping is
a good idea. Let's just reason that putting something in your mouth that explodes is a good idea. No.
And on that note, we turn to a new study published in the Journal of Palliative Medicine. This was an article about bucket lists. Do you have a bucket list?
No.
I do not
officially
have a bucket list.
I mean, I have like one or two things on it, like quit working.
Yeah. I understand that. And I mentioned one time to my wife, I would love to see Northern Italy. Northern Italy was a place I would like to go.
You'd like to walk around. Because you can see it on Google.
Yeah.
But you'd want to walk around.
I want to experience Northern Italy.
So you want some Northern Italy pizza.
You know, not so much the food, because I'm just not, I don't enthusiastically endorse the food places where I go, but there's some artwork that, you know, I would really like to see. Artwork and architecture in Northern Italy would be one.
I never knew you had that in you.
I took some art classes in college, and I've still been trying to figure out everything I saw in the
world. Decided, well, maybe I'll just go ahead and go down this doctor path instead.
Yeah. All right. Let me, for our radio fans, let me just tell you, and I'm not trying to sound snooty or anything. Boy. You should go to Paris.
No way. There, not going to happen.
The modern art in Paris, and especially Musée d'Orsay, they have these art, and you cannot imagine this in a book. These paintings are the size of a wall, and they're made out of little dots. And I will, to the rest of my life, I will never forget my wife going up close and looking at the dots, close enough you could actually make a dot, and then going all the way across the room where you could see what that dot looked like. How in the world an artist can stand there and put a dot in and know that that dot is the correct color and the correct location to make a painting that you can only see when you get across the room. It's amazing. It's absolutely one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. And I could not appreciate that in a book, because in a book, it looks like you just made a bunch of dots. No big deal. In fact, even the science behind that painting is amazing. So there are those things. That would be on my bucket list had I not been to Paris. So you have these things you want to do. What we want to do is we want to keep visiting our kids till they get sick of us. And I suspect you do, too.
I do. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And now mine are away now. So mine, like yours, mine are at a different zip code. You know. So, you know. Traips around the U.S. visiting, which I love.
This study was in the Journal of Palliative Medicine, which is medicine for people. Palliative care is a field of medicine for people who are nearing the end of life, but not at the end of life. If you are close to the end of life, you've decided you're going to give up on medical interventions, and you want to be as comfortable as you can in the final 6 months of your life, that's hospice. Hospice does a wonderful job of making people comfortable after they have given up on trying to intervene against the disease that is taking their life. You do everything that you can to fight this disease, and then if you want to manage the symptoms in your final days and weeks, hospice is a great thing. But there is a stage before then where you may want to continue to take medicines that would prolong your life, but you do not want all interventions possible. And I give people an example. If you cholesterol medicines, they lower your risk of heart disease in the next 5 to 10 years, or blood pressure medicines. But in your last 3 or 4 years of life, if your blood pressure medicine is bothering you, we might be able to get rid of it. Yes, your blood pressure would be high, but no, it would not affect the outcome because you have emphysema or some other condition is not going to allow you to live long enough for the blood pressure to matter.
Right.
And so what we try to do with palliative care is we focus on the things a person really cares about most.
Quality of life.
Quality of life, which we all should be doing. At any rate, you can change your medical approach. You're not trying to prevent everything from happening as a person enters their final 4 or 5 years of life. So at any rate, this was in palliative medicine. They did a search for bucket list. They used the Google. And on the Google, there were 84 million results for bucket lists. And then they used the term advanced directives, which is the formal thing that says, here's what I want the doctors to do at the end of my life. And there were 4.5 million. So again, there are 20 times the number of references to bucket lists than advanced directives. So what they said, and I think this is pretty interesting, they said, maybe we should stop when we're talking about the end of life of our parents, of older people that are in our community. Maybe instead of asking them what they want the doctors to do or not to do, maybe we should ask them what do they want to accomplish with the time they've got left. And that then is the driving force for whether or not they want to spend time in the hospital or the doctor's office. 91% of 3,000 people surveyed had a bucket list. That 91% does not include Rick or myself.
We're not ready for the bucket list yet, right?
Well, when do you decide what you want to accomplish with the rest of your life? Maybe it's time. We should have a bucket list of some sort. They mention traveling, accomplishing a personal goal, hitting a specific life milestone like seeing the kids get married, spending quality time with friends, family, achieving financial stability. I mean, how's that a bucket list? I want to achieve financial stability. Well, I mean, who doesn't? Who's,
right.
That's not on my bucket list, that financial stability thing. So it makes sense. Doing a daring activity. Are you going to do a daring activity? Your kids are growing up. You don't have to take care of your kids
anymore.
As I
get older, that means going down the steps.
I know.
Well, yeah, I'm going to do it every day, Tony.
I thought that I might become more reckless as I got older.
Why don't you get your pilot's license and we'll fly together?
Well, here's
that's
my point.
Daring.
I know it is. Here's
for you,
my point.
Not for me.
I have become more concerned about disability. I've seen people at my age attempt something like
so you're not going to dare
skydiving.
Anybody anything.
No, I think I really value the fact that I still have all of my own joints and bones and body tissues.
So you're going to stay off ladders.
At age 80, I'm going to stop climbing ladders, I hope. Till then, yeah, ladders. But
shoes with tread.
Yeah, shoes with tread and so forth. Since the kids all moved out, I have not become more daring. But bucket lists are starting. They said, why don't we as healthcare providers and why don't we as family members start talking about our elderly family members or our patients' bucket lists and use that as a tool to guide treatment decisions and help find fulfillment for the final months or weeks of life. Adjust visitation policies so the patients can spend more time with their families, discharge their patients early. We've tried doing that to allow them to attend an important event or something like that. That is tough. Sometimes we have become, in a legal sense, they have to leave against medical advice to go to an important family event when we could accommodate that. So perhaps with the use of bucket lists, we can get to where we haven't so far with advanced directives. I don't know. Okay, got a little bit more time for a little more science. I'm going to hit this. NBC News, October 22nd. The number of stroke deaths in the U.S. has fallen sharply. It was a continuous fall. Fewer people are dying. Actually, fewer people dying of
strokes. Is the stroke numbers actually going down, or is the other numbers going up around it?
No, the stroke numbers are going down. Now, it could be that people are dying of something else before they would get strokes, because strokes primarily affect older people. But I don't think so. We were able to manage risk factors since around 1960 in such a way, or something happened in the 1960s in such a way that the risk of heart disease and stroke has steadily declined. It was one of the major things that was fueling an increase in life expectancy is that the number one and at that one time the number three cause of death were both declining, and we think it was probably because of managing risk factors like high blood pressure and cholesterol. If you look at the heart disease data, it did not take a dip when we figured out how to do balloon angioplasties. It did not take a dip when we figured out how to do minimally invasive surgeries or anything like that. It was a steady decline since the 1960s. The new research, though, indicates the long decline in mortality from strokes has leveled off. Dr. Jane Wright, executive director of Million Hearts Program at the CDC, says we are in trouble. Not only are we seeing a leveling off, a stalling of the decades-long decline in death rates from stroke, now strokes are occurring in younger people, ages 35 to 64. So, in fact, we are, you know, Rick, you talked last fractional portion really, in a sense, about dark ages, about people turning their back on scientific inquiry, and about whether or not we may have accelerated that by joining people, like-minded people from around the world, by altering the dynamics of human interaction. It may be then that that somehow we've changed our society so that, and again, I mentioned that we are not a commonwealth, we are not a united, we stand, divided, we fall. No one espouses those principles anymore. It's pretty much every person for themselves. And in the same way, we turn our backs on logical, rational inquiry into the world around us, and instead we have an instinct for science where we go with our feelings. Well, in this case, you know, one of the things that's happened is we have turned our back on the lifestyle that would lower our risk of diseases. Again, with vaping, with our weight increase, with the diet that we eat, we've turned our back on the healthy things that that got us to where we are with a lower rate of heart disease and stroke. And it appears now the death rates are starting to climb again, and the strokes are occurring in a younger age. Discouraging times. I guess as a physician, I see there's more to be done, which is kind of exciting. Yes, I will be employed in the future because of all these things, but I wish so much that we didn't have to ignore our science and slide backwards. We've got to slide out of here, Rick.
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Brian Courtney, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org, or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show, and remember,
Health Matters is used with a proper diet and exercise program, and possibly with other radio shows, to control high blood sugar. Nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, weakness, or metallic taste in mouth may occur. If any of these effects persist or worsen, tell your doctor or radio show host promptly.
Health Matters can rarely cause a serious and sometimes fatal condition called lactic acidosis. Stop listening to Health Matters and get medical help right away if you develop any of these symptoms of lactic acidosis while listening to our show. Unusual tiredness, dizziness, severe drowsiness, chills, cold skin, muscle pain, slow heartbeat, stomach pain with nausea, vomiting, or diarrhea.
Read the patient information leaflet, if available, from your pharmacist before you start listening to our show and each time there is a break. If you have any questions, consult your doctor or pharmacist.
Tell your doctor immediately if any of these conditions occur or if you notice a big change in your overall health. You may need to stop listening to our show temporarily. The elderly are also higher risk from Health Matters, especially those older than 80 years who have not had kidney tests.
Health Matters does not usually cause low blood sugar. However, low blood sugar may occur if our show is prescribed with other anti-diabetic radio shows.
Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of medical research on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.